Morning, ladies and gentlemen. Here with us today, if you would turn with me to the book of Psalms, chapter 27. We're going to look at the first four verses of this chapter, and then we will find ourselves in other sections of the Bible to discuss some matters that pertain to the thoughts of the song that we sang just a moment ago that Daniel was saying about God being able to deliver us, and this song that we just sang about the battle of one is going to be very fitting in what we're going to discuss this morning. My sweetie and I are very grateful for the opportunity given to us to come to be here with you. Thank you for blessing us with the opportunity to be here with your invitation. And your presence this morning is very encouraging, but I know you didn't come for my appreciation. Please know that the value of our presence today is for the Lord and the Lord, for our understanding of His Word, to be better suited in serving in our daily life for His cause and His kingdom. That's what we're here to do. That's what we're here for. And please know the value of that. Yet, please know that I know that you're not going to be quizzed. As to all the things we're going to talk about as in Bible class or in our lesson this morning, but please know that there's got to be maybe one thing that you will be able to glean from our study together. And if there is one thing, then hopefully we've accomplished a lot to understand better what we can do in the future. And maybe we've not done so well in the past, or maybe something we haven't known that will be helpful to us. We look forward to the opportunity this week to get to know more of you better and to even know some of you which we may not know. And we appreciate very much the opportunity God has given us to be together. Please know that one of the things that Diane and I think a lot about opportunities like this is that there's going to be something we're going to gain by being associated with each other. I don't know what that is. I can't lay out, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is our goal. Number one, I don't know what all those are. But if we've got our heart set in the right place, then I know there's going to be something we're going to gain from it. And whatever opportunity that is. In the case of Psalm chapter 27, some of the things that the psalmist goes through is not what we would consider the right environment of which you're going to learn something. In other words, we want to sit down and think, okay, we're going to sit down. Some of our friends are going to have a cup of coffee or a glass of tea. We're going to drink some water. Or we're going to have something to eat. And we're going to gain a lot by being together because we're in this environment. It's so warm. It's so cozy. It's so nice. And we're with associates. And therefore, we just know we're going to get something out of this because everything's just right. In these circumstances, everything's not just right. Let me read this to you. And you read it with me. Jehovah is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? That's a great question. Jehovah is the strength of my life. On whom shall I be afraid? When evildoers came upon me to eat my flesh, even my adversaries and my foes, they stumbled and fell. Though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, even then will I be confident. One thing have I asked of Jehovah, that will I seek after. Then I may dwell in the house of Jehovah all the days of my life to behold the beauty of Jehovah and to inquire in His temple. You would think everything is just really wonderful, where you could make the very first statement in verse 1, Jehovah is my light and my salvation. But then it goes on and talks about evildoers. And then it talks about adversity. Even though a host of people camp against me, and even if a war came against me. So the progression of the intensity of the things that he faces, from evildoers to adversaries to a camp, a host of people to a war. I mean, this is building. This is getting intensely worse. And even in the midst of all this, you've got to know, as he states in verse 1, Jehovah is my light, my salvation. Whom shall I fear? He keeps talking about whom shall I be afraid. And then he talks about the war. I will be confident in verse 3. And then one thing I ask of Jehovah, that will I seek after, and I will dwell in the house of Jehovah all the days of my life. In other words, whenever the pressure's on, to him, he knows that God's the one he turns to as the means of recovery or the means of truly understanding what he needs to do in the midst of all those circumstances, no matter what they are. Even if they're absolutely the worst, then they're severe. And that's not only in this age, but as we're going to talk about in our lesson this morning, that's true in Daniel chapter 3. Let's go over to Daniel chapter 3 and let's look at this together. A very familiar story to some of you, of where there's this man named Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. There are people named Daniel. There are people named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego who are in this particular event that takes place in Babylonian captivity. In a circumstance that's not very pleasant, yet there are a lot of things about this that are very awe-striking to these three individuals, as well as to Daniel, circumstances in which maybe they've never been in before, but there's so much that's there. You think, oh man, this has got to be great. This is going to be a wonderful place for me to be. Well, when you're in captivity, it's not very, very pleasant. Yet, for him, Nebuchadnezzar is going to try to change their mind about certain things. You go back to chapter 1, and you see he's going to try to transform their mind into the Chaldean lifestyle, behavior, attitudes, things around them, everything like that. He's going to try to transform their mind into something that will be conditioned to a Chaldean. Israelites not used to that. The Jews not used to that. Definitely, they had their own king. We have a lot of kings way back and forth. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego brought into a circumstance of which they did not ever anticipate. In fact, when you get to chapter 3, the king had so much pride about himself, he made an image. He made an image that everybody's going to bow down to. He gathered all of his dignitaries around him, verse 2, all the deputies, all the sheriffs, all the councils, all the treasurers, everything, therefore, to dedicate this particular image. And then he commanded everybody, when they hear the sound of the particular noises of the fruit, of the flute, and the dulcimer, the cornet, the psaltery, everybody's going to bow down. Everybody's going to be falling down to the image that he wanted. The golden image, as it says in verse 7. There were three men that did not do that. And it was found out in verse 8 and verse 9 that Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego didn't do this. They didn't bow down. The news came back to the officials that these three guys didn't do that. Okay, Nebuchadnezzar says, okay, let's talk about this. And in verse 13, they brought these men before the king. And in verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar says, is it a purpose, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you serve not my God, nor worship the golden image which I've set up? I mean, now God's proud enough that he's the king, number one. Then he has, and if you're a God to yourself, then you can make any image that you want to for everybody else to bow down to. And it really is insulting, isn't it, when somebody doesn't do what you want them to do. When you got so much pride built up, that you think you've got control of everything, and you make this image and nobody bows down to it when the songs are played, when the instrumental music comes up. Is there a purpose that you do this? It's almost like you go give the second chance of verse 15 to now. Now, if you be ready that at the time you hear the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, the psaltery, the dulcimer, all kinds of music, you fall down and worship the image which you do well. But if you do not, you shall be cast in the same fire in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hand? You'll do this. Who is the God that will be in opposition to my God that will deliver you out of my hand? Everything's about himself. Everything's about me. Who is that God that should live your money? Verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they go on and say, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer thee this matter. And I think this is a very interesting answer that they give, because they don't say, I don't care what you say. I don't care what decree you make. I mean, they're not very arrogantly rebellious to them to say, okay, go ahead and do what you want. I don't care. They don't have this divine attitude that says, well, here's what we want you to know. We are Jews, And we oppose it. And he gets into discussion, or they don't get into discussion, and say, let's talk about being a Jew. Let's talk about being an Israelite. Let's talk about following God. But here's what they say. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning, fiery furnace. And he will deliver us out of thy hand, O king. But if it not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy God, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set. God is, in their words, able. He says that. They say that in verse 17. He is able. Not only is able, he will, in verse 17. But not only that, you go to verse 18. If he doesn't, we will not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image which you set up. Three things. He is able, he will. If he does not, we will not serve your gods. We're going to get into it a little bit later about the response to this on the part of Nebuchadnezzar to their answer. But I want you to, let's stay here with me in this particular passage. First of all, let's talk about the fact of God being able. God could not. And you got to know the answer with, and this is, this. There's two things going on here. There's an easy part of this and there's a hard part of this. The easy part is God is able. And I don't know how many of you think about this or not, but we would say, if somebody came up, well, can God do anything? And everybody would say, well, yes, he can do anything. He can, if he wants to, stop this virus. He can stop it. He can do that. He can give you a boy or a girl to date, if you're looking for someone. He can give you a spouse. He can give you children. He can give you a house. He can give you a job. He can do all those things. He can, he's able to do all those things. A lot of those things in which I just mentioned here are things that people are looking for. Can God do this? Is able? That's the easy part of this. That's the real easy part of this, and that is God is able. The hard part of this, will he deliver us out of the hand of him? Will. In other words, it's going to be based upon his purpose and his design that he will deliver him out of the hand of the king. Will he stop the virus? Will he give the boy? Will he give the girl to the one that's looking for that? Will he give the husband? Will he give the children? Will he give the house? Will he give the job? Will he do it? Is that going to suit well into his purpose? Can he do it? Yes. Will he do it? That's where it's hard. That's where it's hard. Trying to put those two things together. Hold your hand over here in the book of Daniel chapter 3 and go back. And one of the passages that we looked at in the Bible class in Daniel chapter 2, something that was stated about Jesus Christ coming to the world that is mentioned, verse 6, who existed in the form of God, can not dominion and equality with God think to be grasped, but even himself taking the form of a servant, being made a likeness of man, being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, becoming obedient unto death, even to death of the cross. And we say, if you look at everything that circles around Jesus' death, you got to go over here to John chapter 12 and think about, okay, can God deliver Jesus from being crucified? And you know the answer would be yes. In John chapter 12 and verse 15, excuse me, verse 26, if a man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there will also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will I honor, will the Father honor. Now is my soul troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour. Can God do it? Yes. God is able to save him from this hour. But for this cause came I unto this hour. Okay, if you notice in verse 26 and 27, out of the book of John chapter 12, that's almost the same thing as you got over here in Daniel chapter 3, verse 17, 18. Father, glorify thy name. There came therefore a voice out of heaven saying, I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. Here's an interesting thing. The easy part of God delivering Jesus from being crucified is our 12 legions of angels. God can do that. We think 12 legions of angels is pretty tall order. But for Jesus, that's easy. Let's do something to remove the possibilities of crucifixion and death, and let's call 12 legions of angels and wipe them all out. That's easy. God can and able to do it. That's John chapter 12. Will he? That's the hard part. Not only in this text, but when Jesus was in the garden and the circumstance was not as I will, but thou will be done. God can deliver. Here's the most interesting thing that's really parallel with the book of Daniel chapter 3. God is able, God is real, but for Jesus, his God will is living. But he would not serve Satan in the midst of the suffering and mockery and the insults and the ultimate crucifixion. So as a result of this, when you go back to Daniel chapter 3, verse 1, as a result of the answer that is given by the three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have now insulted him to the point that, as it says in verse 19, this man's countenance has changed tremendously. He is full of fury. I don't know if you've ever seen people who are really hot-headed or really upset or really intensely angered. It's almost like their blood goes all the way to their head and their face starts turning different colors. And their whole countenance changes, and it's beads of sweat probably sometimes come out the side of their temples. And all of a sudden, you think, I don't know what this guy's going to do next. I don't know if he's going to pull a gun on me. I don't know if he's going to lash out. I don't know if he's going to punch me. I don't know what that person's going to do. He's furious. So much so that to the intro that he's going to give, he said, turn the heat up. Not just one battle, not from 400 to 450, let's make it 700. Let's make it seven times hotter than what it is. You're supposed to be putting these people in the fire within an hour once they disobey the command of God. The intensity of this heat is such. When you get to verse 22 and 23, the men who are going to take Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to the fire, they're killed. They're slain. And they fall down in verse 23, bound into the midst of the burning furnace. Seven times hotter than it originally would have been for anybody else. Instead of trying to go into the reason as to why he would make it seven times rather than six or 20 times, it's not really that important as to know, based on the intensity of a person's disposition and attitude, their anger reaches a level that they want to put as much heat and suffering on the hearts and the lives of other people. That's exactly what happens here. God is able. God will. When the heat is rising to a level in your life, what is it that you think God will do? When Jesus came to the world, what do they think this guy's going to be? He's going to be the king. He's going to rescue us. He's going to be the one that will overcome the Roman Empire. He's going to be the one that will comfort us. He'll be the one that will heal all our diseases, raise all of our dead. He'll be the one that will give us whatever it is we need. That's what their will of Jesus would be. That's not what God did. God allowed his own son to put in the fire. Let's talk about fire in this people. And let's talk about this fire which these people put in. When you talk about the fire which these people put in this intense heat, the most amazing thing about this is probably as hot as you could ever find anybody. But in the fire, is where God is going to be glorified. In the scriptures, let's go back to the book of Psalm chapter 66 just a minute. That's putting us in the fire is exactly what God does. In verse 10 of book of Psalm 66, for thou, O God, has proved us, you have tried us as silver is tried. How do you try silver? Beating. You know, you just cut it up. No, you put it in the fire. You mold it. You bring it out. And then he says, thou hast tried us as silver is tried. Thou broughtest us into the net. Thou layest a sore burden upon our loins. When thou didst cause men to ride over our heads, we went through the fire and through water, but thou broughtest us out into a wealthy place. God is able, but God put us through the fire. Proverbs chapter 17. Proverbs 17, verse 3. The refining pot is for silver, and the furnace for gold, but Jehovah tries the hearts. That's what he says about us. In Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah says in Isaiah chapter 48, beginning in verse 8, yea, thou heardest not, yea, thou knewest not, yea, from of old, thy ear was not open, for I knew that thou dealt treacherously, and thou hast called a transgressor from thy womb. For my name's sake will I defer my anger, for my praise will I refrain from thee, that I will cut thee not off. Why not? Why don't you just cut off? In verse 10, behold, I refined thee, but not as silver. I have chosen thee in the furnace of affliction. For my own sake, for my own sake will I do it, for how should my name be profaned, and my glory will I not give to another? He is warning us. God's warning to put us in the fire. To prove us. To refine us. To cleanse us. To purify us. You probably heard it said, how do we know where we stand until we're tempted? This is almost the same thing in circumstances which Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego faced. Here in Daniel chapter 3, how do you know where they stand until you put them in the fire? There's no indication here. Nothing is implied to say they're squirming. They're trying to get out of the hands of the people that are going to throw them in the fire. They're trying to get away. And as soon as these guys that are there, that are taking them there, they run away. There's nothing about that. And they're not being bitter because of what's about them. Say that if you had a choice of what kind of discipline we would rather have from God, we want it on our terms. We want it to be easy. We don't want it to be really intense. We would not want it to be as difficult as I've seen other people go through. Maybe give us a little bit of it, but not a whole lot of it. The fire's not pleasant. Please know, it is not comfortable. We all realize that. It is the fruit that is born as a result of it. Think about it this way. Cheryl and Kate were talking to us last night about getting all these apples, pressing them in the apple juice. We love apples down here. The heat is what brought those apples into being born. That's the fruit from the heat. It is the same heat that in Arizona brings absolute barrenness. The heat is so intense out there. There's no apple trees that survive out there like there are here. The same heat, the same sun is that which brings about fruit. Over here, it's thorns and barrenness. For over here, it's all these apple trees that we're so wonderfully enjoying. So therefore, when the heat is on and the fire is there,
suffering and affliction comes from you, it comes from me.
It tests us. Is God able?
Yes.
Will he? He will provide for you in the midst of the heat and the midst of the fire and understand that you're either going to come out barren and your faith is going to just go out, go up and smoke, or your faith is going to be strong and you're going to bear fruit for him. We want it easy. We want it comfortable. But God is able and will under the most difficult circumstances. When you go a little bit further in this text, in the book of Daniel chapter 3, some interesting things happen. Once the fire is seven times hotter than before, I want you to notice something. Back up in verse, let's say verse 20, verse 21, and verse 23, and verse 24, the word bind and bound are all mentioned regarding what they're going to do to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You put binds around them. I mean, they're not going to be handcuffs. We would know them. They're going to probably be something made out of something that's going to burn up really easy. So therefore, here's the situation. They go into the fire, they're bound. Okay. Seven times hotter than before. What's going to happen to the binding? Probably going to burn up real quick, along with their bodies, probably. But the binding's going to be gone. And it's amazing to me that it's what you see here. Nebuchadnezzar realizes something in verse 24 and is astonished at what he sees. He says, did we not bind three men into and cast them in the midst of the fire? And they answered, true, O king, we did. Yep, we did. And verse 25, he said, well, I see four men there, loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt, and the aspect of the fourth is like a son of God's. So here they are, they're being put and bound into a fire seven times harder than before, and all of a sudden, they're loose. Not only are they loose, they're walking around loose, but then there's another one in there that wasn't thrown in there before. Let me relay something to you that may enter this. And it is from the book of Luke chapter 4, where there's a statement that is made by Jesus himself in chapter 4 of the book of Luke when he's standing there in the synagogue in Nazareth. And he presents these words out of the book of Isaiah chapter 61, verse 1. The Spirit of the Lord, this is verse 18, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because he anointed me to preach this is to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recover the sight of the blind and to let set at liberty them that are bruised, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. Jesus the Christ, when people are bound in sin, Romans chapter 6 talks about being in bondage. This bondage of which we're living in from every single day, who's able to deliver us? Who is our refuge? Who's our strength? Who is the one that will help us when circumstances around us are like Psalm chapter 27 says, we're compassed about with so many adversaries, so much pressure, like a camp of people around us that can't wait to do battle and do war against us. What's going to happen when the heat is on our life? And we're in the middle of the fire. One who is one of God's people, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they are released. They are released. Jesus is the only one that can let the captives free. I really believe this is who we're looking at here in Luke Daniel chapter 3 and verse 25. The one that missed them is the one like Peter. Luke chapter 4 talks about who's going to release the captive. Loose them. Release them from their bondage. Set them free. The book of Galatians chapter 5 talks about this. In Galatians 5, verse 1, there's a statement that's made about Jesus. It said, "For freedom did Jesus or Christ set us free. Stand fast, therefore, and be not entangled again, even in a yoke of bondage." The bondage, to be released from that, is freedom. The person involved in that is Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ set us free. And you notice in verse 1 of the book of Galatians 5, it says, "Stand fast, therefore." And if you notice over here in Daniel chapter 3, that these men are walking in the midst of the fire. They're walking loose. There's nothing binding them. All that's thrown away. They're walking there with someone else who is the one who released them. Wait a minute. If you were released, why are you still in the fire? The release comes a little bit later. Look at those. They are loose in the fire, walking with the one who is like the God, like the Son of the gods. Not the Son of God, but like a son of the gods. In the difficulties that life you face, the sufferings, the afflictions, the fire, the pain, all the intense moments of which you face, how is it that you most often handle that? In other words, how do you get peace and release and freedom from all that? I go to the doctor. When I go to the doctor, I tell them, this is hurting. And I'm depressed about this, and I'm anxious about this, and this is difficult, and it gives me medicine. Other people, they'll even go to the doctor. They'll go to the liquor store. Some people don't go to the liquor store, they'll go out on the street, find somebody that can give them something. They'll make them feel better. And if there's not anybody around them, they'll go find somebody that's a good buddy of theirs and talks to them. It kind of just gets it off their chest, as I say. Because there's so many difficult things, there's so much pressure, so much affliction, so much heat on the life, they don't know where to go, so they just start telling everybody, or this person is a good friend of theirs, everything they want to know. Or things that they may not have wanted to know that they got. What do you do if you're a man hanging on the cross and the heat and the pressure and the fire is on. You look at all those people and you say, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." If you're an apostle and they throw you in prison because you're teaching about Jesus and the heat and the pressure and the affliction, and you know what? They don't know what they're going to do with you while you're bound in prison. What do? You start singing. And if you're an apostle, and there's this particular difficulty that you're facing, a thorn in the flesh, as Paul talked about in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and you're dealing with this, and you pray to God, let it go, get rid of it, do something with it. Comfort me, help me. What do you understand? So here's what I'm here to tell you folks about what's going on here in Daniel chapter 3. In the midst of all the heat, in the midst of all the suffering, in the midst of all the affliction, whatever the pressure is that you're dealing with, please know that God is able, God will, and if you're going through the fire, there's always going to be Jesus Christ in the location of the fire with you, loosing you, giving you an opportunity to be set free in the midst of the fire. Enabling you to be who you want you to be while you're wishing it goes away. In the midst of what you're dealing with, God is going to be right there with his son. And he's going to give you freedom in the midst of the fire. And when you walk, once these men are delivered, this is chapter 3, verse 28. Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, once they're out, then you've got to know that there is no... It is amazing to me to see people who go through such intense suffering and afflictions, through cancers, through diabetes, through all kinds of difficult diseases and all this. And look at it, and I've heard people say this more times than not. These people come into the church building and they worship and they look at him and say, it doesn't look like they suffer from anything. But I know they're hurt. And I'm going to look into the eyes of people this morning who are in the middle of suffering. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the pain is. I don't know what the fire is. And you may come in and you ask people, ask you how you're doing, and you say, fine. Individuals that in the midst of the heat and the suffering realize there's somebody right beside you that will help you live and set you free in your walk and your righteousness and freedom. And these men are released with no smoke on them, no sense hair. Their garments are not even touched by the smell of fire. And Nebuchadnezzar says in verse 28, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and have yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any God except their own. Please know that when you go and walk through fire, you do not go by yourself. You do not go alone. Because God is the one that has delivered. The deliverance is a matter of eternity. When we don't compromise with the enemies in the midst of the difficulties that we may face, and demeaning as it may be, and as much as they can offer us. And please know, sometimes the fire is by choice. Sometimes the fire is not by choice. Sometimes you lose a job. You didn't choose that. Sometimes you are one who lives safely, and you're put in the fire because of decisions that you made that are right and true. So sometimes the fire is by choice, and sometimes it's not. Regardless of when you're put in the fire, 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 6 to verse 7 says, the fire is to purify, it's to cleanse, it's to refine us. Can God, is he able? Yes. Really? It's about his purpose, not mine. If you were one of these individuals this morning, you're doing this in the purpose of God, and you're dealing with a lot of you're not a Christian, you're dealing with a lot of intense difficulties in your life. Do not let the fire push you away. Let the fire come, let the fire drive you come. If you want to be away, and you lose this, the bonds. And you'll be right there with you through the fire. And you live in it from there. Your confession of Jesus is the Christ. Is the first step of your belief. And then it takes you to the point of changing where you resign yourself to the one who releases the bondage of sin, and you want to be the one who will be baptized and wash everything away. Doesn't mean that the heat won't go away. Doesn't mean the pressure and the affliction and the suffering that you're facing automatically, just like miraculously, goes away because you're baptized in the water. It's the fact that you've chosen to have someone right there with you to deliver you in the midst of all that. God is able. And God is able. The challenge for those that are Christians is this. Sometimes maybe we think that we're able to have the wherewithal to get over it, or to go through it, or I can handle it. And to say we've got some kind of academic excellence about us or educational ability to overcome any kind of difficulty we ever faced. But that's just pride. And you go through the fire. And if the fire's caused you to doubt, the fire has intensified your fear. And if the affliction has really caused you to wonder if God's present, please know the need of your repentance and prayers to God. That the thoughts and the intentions of your heart be forgiven and put him back in the place of where he was before by the Lord yourself. We want to help you. We'd love to do that. But clearly God's going to do that. Hopefully, all of us. Allow him to do that.